When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is CFF All Access, the college fantasy football podcast at Fantasy Points. We are excited to be with you guys today. I got Zach Hall and Mike Bainbridge with me. Mike is back after missing for a couple weeks. You guys had a bachelor party over there, didn't you, Mike?
Yeah, my traveling adventures are done for just a little bit here until the honeymoon in July. So ready to talk college fantasy football, and I'll be here with you guys for a few weeks now before the wedding.
It's going to be good to have you, Zach, back as always. Great to have you. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Excited to jump in tonight. It'll be a good show.
Yeah, it's going to be a good show. Hey, last week we went through our first five of our top 10 quarterbacks. So we decided we're going to do our last five this show. And we also have a little bit of a bonus for you. Mike has a quarterback that's outside of this consensus top 10 that we wanted to share with you guys. So Mike's going to be bringing that tonight. We will bury the lead on that and not give you that quarterback's name right now. So we'll have that later. And then we're going to be answering any kind of questions in between all that. And it's going to be a good show, fun show. So if you have any questions about quarterbacks, put them in the comments and then we'll get to them throughout the show. All right. Well, let's get into this. We have our first of our last five quarterbacks coming up. We will put up the graphic right now of the first of the top 10 quarterbacks that we have. Thomas, if you want to put that up. We have been going through these. Our first five were Caden Salter. We had Byron Brown, Dylan Gabriel, and then we had Jordan McLeod. And then we finished off with Jackson Dart last week. This week, we are going to get into the guy who has the easiest name to say in all of college football, Nico Iamaleva. I've heard that pronounced about five different ways. I'm not sure which one's the right one, but that's the one way that I pronounce it. And so I'm going to pass this off to you, Zach, because you are running the ship on Nico this week.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm just going to call him Nico. I'm not even going to try and butcher that last name. So Nico, he's an interesting quarterback for us. He's 6'6", 210 pounds. So good size there. But we have really limited action with him last year. Only played in five games total last year. Threw for 314 yards, two touchdowns. Ran for 71 yards there and three touchdowns. He, like I said, limited action, but if you watch the bowl games, I'm not huge on using bowl games to project into the next year, but I think we got to see a little bit of how they want to use Nico this year. In the bowl game versus Iowa, which solid defense last year, he went 12 for 19 for 151 passing yards and a touchdown, and then he had 15 rushing attempts for only 27 yards, but he had three touchdowns. So overall, pretty solid performance for him. Coming into this year, looking at his play caller, Josh Heupel. If you watched last week, talked a little bit about Dylan Gabriel, and Dylan Gabriel actually was under Heupel for a couple years over at UCF. Heupel's a guy that really produces pretty solid quarterbacks for us. The last seven seasons, his QB1 has at least been a top 32, and actually the worst was last year with Joe Milton at QB32. But we've seen QB7, QB14, QB20. So really get a lot of value out of his quarterbacks. They averaged 3,200 passing yards, 29 passing touchdowns. So really good volume coming out of the passing game. And then he uses the quarterback in the run game, which I think we've seen that in the past with Dylan Gabriel, Mackenzie Milton at UCF. Hendon Hooker, he used him in the run game as well. I mean, we saw Hendon Hooker run for 620 yards in 2021, five touchdowns. So there can be a lot of value in the system, especially when he's running that quarterback, which for Nico this coming year, we have him projected to do a little bit over 3,000 passing yards and 26 touchdowns, which is a little bit under that 8-year average for Heupel. So a little bit conservative there for us. And then rushing for 325 yards and 5 touchdowns there as well. So that's where that projection ends up for him. Some players that he has coming back, Squirrel White, which is a guy that I actually really like his value. I know this isn't a receiver show, but he's got good value in drafts right now. Brew McCoy, if he can stay healthy. We have Dylan Sampson at running back, 3 offensive line starters as well. So this offense, it's a good offense. The one thing, though, that really stuck out to me and I think is really going to determine Nico's value outside of, you know, if they're going to use him in that run game. But when you look back at Josh Heupel and his quarterbacks that were top 10, top 15 QBs, they were scoring 42 points a game in that offense. Last year, we only saw him score 31.8 points per game. So it's really, when I'm looking at this, are we going to see that Tennessee offense get closer to that 42? That's a big jump from what we saw last year. So to me, that's really going to determine where he's going to fall. Potential is definitely there with him. You know, he had a lot of hype coming in out of high school. I think the coaching staff really likes Nico and what he can do, his skill set. But again, it's really going to come down to if this offense is going to be able to score like they had in the past, and they're going to have to outperform what they did last year for him to come close to this number 6 ranking. I think we had him projected number 9 projection wise. So I think there was a question last week actually about Nico in the chat asking, I think they were like, why is Nico up there? Is this a projection or is this based on projection? And it definitely is, looking at the system, what a dual threat quarterback, a guy that they're going to use in the run game, has done in that system. But I would say the confidence is pretty low. It's at a 56 in our confidence rating. And it just, to me, it feels like this is definitely a potential ranking here. You know, he has a potential to do it, but maybe, you know, if you're more of a cautious drafter, or, you know, he might not be the guy for you. There might be some better options. I think he's the only guy in the top 10, maybe outside of Avery Johnson, where it's limited action, right? I think we got a couple games with Avery Johnson last year, but Nico's just, we just haven't seen it. So yeah, it is a prediction, but I'm question to you guys, you know, do you have faith that this offense can see that jump from 32 points a game closer to that 42 and see that value with Nico?
Zach, I was going to say, what is it, just the inexperience that's built into that 56% confidence rating?
Yeah. So it's, there's a lot of things, that's in there. It's going to be, the player experience. It takes into account play caller history. So all of that Josh Heupel stuff gets built into there. Depth chart, confidence, injury history. But really the thing that's going to knock him is just 1 year in the system right now with very limited experience. And that's kind of what knocks him back.
Yeah, because I was going to say, I was surprised by that, because if you have a confidence rating for a Josh Heupel off, like a quarterback in a Josh Heupel offense, that's going to be above 90%, right? You went over it. I went even 8 years, right? 8 years straight that the Josh Heupel quarterback one has finished inside the top 40. That's pretty high confidence to me. And I would also say with Nico, like, I like the way just kind of the situation is set up. I know it's his first year, you know, inexperience, but you kind of look at how Tennessee performed, you know, based on reports in the spring. You know, Cam Seldon's injured in the backfield, so they really only have Dylan Sampson and Nico to run the football legitimately right now. They're very confident in from what it seems like, the receivers with Chris Brazell, Squirrel White, Brew McCoy, a multitude of options. So I kind of like the way that this is set up for Nico this year, with the returning talent on that Tennessee offense. And, you know, I kind of like the schedule too. I noted here the back end of the schedule here in the college fantasy playoffs. You get Georgia in week, what would that be, 12. But then you finish up with UTEP and at Vanderbilt. Like, they're going to steamroll those two teams in the back half of that schedule. So you were really looking at a strong option at quarterback down the stretch. So I'm big on Nico this year for sure.
Yeah, and I think what's crazy, right, is you look back at the bowl game against Iowa, very inexperienced. He didn't even really throw the ball well because it's Iowa, and he still comes away with 30 fantasy points in that game. I mean, it's just crazy. His, you know, his rushing ability gives him a floor, I think, every week. And then you add in, like you said, Mike, you talked about all those guys in that spring game. You know, Brazell looked really good in that offense, and then and it's a spring game, whatever. But Mike Matthews, true freshman, I think what these guys that they brought in are going to do is just raise the floor of that receiving room, because you're still going to have Brew McCoy, Dante Thornton, obviously Squirrel and all that. So I think it's wheels up for a guy like Nico. I mean, the other thing, you have Cam Seldon, who just got hurt. And if they don't bring in another back here in the portal, which maybe they do.
You need Nico. You need Nico to run, right?
Right, right. You know, Dylan Sampson's not even that big of a guy, right? So you can see him even getting more carries around the goal line. And he's a smart runner, right? I think in the bowl game, he didn't take a lot of unnecessary hits. You see a Jaden Daniels, I mean, he'll get rocked at times because he's just not getting down. Nico seemed to be smart. He'll get out of bounds. He'll get what he can. And I think as a dual threat, like for those of us that are going to get those type of guys, we have to get guys that aren't going to put themselves in harm's way. So, yeah, I think Nico, I think we all had him 6 or 5. I don't know. Mike, do you know where you had him in your rankings yet?
Closer to 9 or 10 right now.
Yep. Okay.
But with the potential to move up, obviously.
Yep. That's great. All right. Hey, we're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to get into the rest of our top 10 QBs.
Hello, Pantheon podcast listeners. Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has 3 pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have, but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out, because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with 2 devices at once. New quick charge function, 3 customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right. You'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
All right, we are back, and we are at our number 7 QB, Garrett Green. Garrett Green's from West Virginia. He is 5'11", 201. My man's got a baseball background, just fun. Mike, Zach, and I all get into the recruiting aspect of this stuff, so we have these random facts just floating through our minds. But Garrett Green, man, he's a great baseball player growing up, great athlete, and that's what he is, playing this quarterback position. This last year, he really broke out. He had 2,400 yards passing. But what made him so great was his 770 yards rushing and 13 TDs on the ground. This is a guy really over the back half of the year, like CJ Donaldson got hurt, Jaheim White came in, and he started also to run the ball a lot more. And his back half of the season, particularly in the playoffs, CFF playoffs, was unbelievable. I think he had 2 40-point games during that stretch. So if you had him, you did really well in the playoffs. And then, look, he's got a good team situation. A lot of his star players are returning. You have Jaden Bray, Mike Bainbridge's boy, is added into the mix here. And then you have Neil Brown as a play caller. He's pretty good overall. And Garrett Green has added in kind of his own rushing ability, which is really an anomaly in Neil Brown's system. He typically has more like straight pocket passers as his guys, even the guys that have been successful. But Garrett Green's a little bit different. But I think that he's done really well in the system. He basically saved Neil Brown's job last year when CJ Donaldson really wasn't doing much. It was Jaheim White and Garrett Green down the stretch that were just absolutely killing it. So our projections, we're projecting for 2,400 yards passing, 17 TDs. So not much to the air, but again, 711 yards and 10 touchdowns on the ground for 29.1 fantasy points per game. With a, you know, again, a high confidence score here of 80%. But, you know, with Garrett Green being an outlier in the system, are you guys concerned at all that, you know, Neil Brown comes back in and starts wanting him to pass more, run less, you know, puts his hands back and really limits Garrett Green this year? Or do you think he's going to let Garrett Green go and do what he did last year?
I would venture to guess that me and Zach had the exact same problem when compiling our projections that, for me personally, Garrett Green was one of, if not the most difficult quarterback to project, simply because of what you said, Josh. His 13 rushing touchdowns last year is an outlier for this system, right? The highest number of touchdowns that a quarterback ran for in under Neil Brown is 6, I believe, from Patrick Toles at Kentucky. Remember that name? Back in 2014. So it's like, how do you project it, right? Is he just going to replicate kind of what he did last year? Or are we going to see regression? And I think we could all agree that there is a very high potential that we're going to see some regression here, just because of how much of an outlier those 13 rushing touchdowns were from Garrett Green.
Yeah. What do you think, Zach?
Yeah. It's funny, Mike, that you said that, because he was tough. And the big thing for me was when you look at what he did last year, that 13 touchdowns really sticked out. And Josh, you mentioned it just at the end of the year and how Jaheim White really came on. And are they going to be able to rely on him a little bit more and not use Green so much in that run game? I still really like Green, but he's a guy. He's one of those guys in the top 10 that we have right now that I could see he by the end of the season, he kind of falls out because of where he's at in the run game, right? That 13 touchdowns falls off. I mean, he only had 21% of the carries, which is a lot for this system, but 13 touchdowns on only 21% of those carries is quite the load. And I just feel like there's definitely potential for that to really drop off. I mean, the system has been not great for QBs. And so this is one of the guys. Actually, there's another guy that's coming up, but one of the guys that I feel like could drop out, but I still really like Garrett Green. I've taken him in some drafts. That dual threat quarterback, it's hard to pass up on those guys, especially when they're proven like this and they've done it. So,
yeah. And he's 5'11". He's not a big guy, and he's not one that protects himself as well as Nico. I've seen Garrett Green take some shots. He also has a lot of long runs. I mean, he's a very good athlete. And the problem with long runs is you see guys get injured on these long runs, either tackled from behind, right? And you see ankle injuries on those type of things. And so you just got to be careful with guys like that. I mean, I really like Garrett Green. I mean, I think his upside is 40 fantasy points a game. And it's just because, he throws... You know, how many touchdowns did he have through the air last year? It was 16. I mean, 16, he's not throwing. Yeah. So he's not throwing a ton, right? And so there's just so much that he's doing on the ground. He reminds me a lot of Quentin Flowers back in the day at South Florida, where you just didn't get a lot through the air. But, you know, a guy had like 15 to 20 rushing touchdowns, and that makes all the difference in the world. So, you know, if you're going to draft Garrett Green, I mean, we've all been taking him in different places. At least I have. And, you know, but there's an inherent risk to taking a guy like Garrett Green here. And I think we just all need to be aware of it, and it needs to be baked into us doing it. The upside is crazy, but, you know, realize there's some downside.
I like the surrounding pieces too. Josh, you mentioned that the wide receivers, Jaden Bray, I guess maybe he'll break out one of these years. But you know, Treylon Ray, I was very impressed, with Treylon Ray last year. So he could be potentially wide receiver one there. Cole Taylor, the tight end, I believe around 30 catches last year. I don't have that offhand, but, they bring back most of their wide receiver core. And you guys mentioned three offensive linemen, two of them are, two others, that will step into that starting lineup are got some rotation, snaps last year. So, you know, a lot to like with the offense coming back with, you know, hopefully supports Garrett Green and in his top 10 ranking.
Yep. Totally agree. Hey, if you guys have any questions, feel free to leave them in the chat and we'll answer those throughout the show. Our number 8 QB here is Haynes King. And that was Froton's guy. Froton did not want anybody else to give the breakdown because he has the ultimate breakdown for Haynes King. And I'm curious to see what he has to say.
Yeah, I was going to say, do we know if it's good or bad? Like, is he arguing for or against Haynes King? I don't know that answer.
he hasn't said. So we're going to let him break him down the next show. And so we're going to skip him this week. That's part of why we have a little bonus Mike Bainbridge guy here coming up. But our next QB, number 9, is Shedeur Sanders. And Zach, you're going to break him down.
Yeah, so we got Shedeur Sanders, quarterback at Colorado, 6'2", 215. Last year, he threw for 3,200 yards, 27 touchdowns, 3 interceptions. Didn't do anything in the ground game. He did have 4 rushing touchdowns, but just not a lot there. Wanted to go back just real quick at Jackson State. His first year there, he threw for 3,200 yards, and then second year, 3,700 yards. He had 6 top 2 finishes last year. Early in the year, he was really strong in the year, fantasy wise. 4 games with at least 4 passing touchdowns, and this is the kicker with him. Over the last 6 games, he only averaged 20 points per game. So coincides with a few things I think we saw last year. One, Sean Lewis was no longer the OC. Which, if you watched our show a few episodes back, we really like Sean Lewis. We talked about his quarterback. They just ran into a lot of injuries, some depth issues with that team. And we just kind of saw that team really run out of gas last year. It really fell off towards the end of the year last year. Looking at what he's done or what the system has, Pat Shurmur, he's averaging 3,400 passing yards, 32 touchdowns, 4 rushing touchdowns. That's Dion. Sorry. That's Dion's, those last 3 years. We have really limited history with these guys, in the college ranks. I don't love, Shurmur, but I think, when we're looking at this, Dion's going to want Shedeur to have a good season, right? So I don't know if we'll I think they're still going to try and use him. He's still going to throw the ball. He has Travis Hunter should be back. He has LeJonte Wester, Jimmy Horn, Dylan Edwards. I can't remember who it was. You guys might help me. I think they just got a running back in the portal.
Dallin Hayden.
Yeah, there you go. They have two offensive line starters coming back. I know they've got some guys in the portal, so they're really trying to build that back up. I think we can all agree we really like the receivers in this offense. So the potential is there. I think they're going to throw the ball. I wanted to call out the Jackson State passing yardage just because Sanders has never thrown under 3,000 yards as a starting quarterback. So they're going to pass the ball, but this is one guy that I think we could see really similar to how last year played out, where he starts off hot. I mean, you look at the front part of his schedule: North Dakota State, Nebraska, Colorado State, Baylor, UCF. Right? It just feels like we could see the same thing we saw last year with him, where he really starts off hot. Travis Hunter's going to be healthy, right? They have some of those other receivers, Wester, Horn. So I think that offense is really going to be going pretty good. I don't really think their defense is going to see a huge jump in improvement. So I think this offense is going to have to score. But I think the concern with me here on Sanders and is just what is that back half of the season going to look like again? Do they have the depth? If they do see some injuries early in the year, are we going to see kind of that 20 points a game that we saw from Sanders last year kind of come back in? So that for me, again, I like the weapons in this offense a lot. Sanders has talent. He threw for 30 touchdowns, 40 touchdowns, 27. So, I mean, they're going to throw the ball. But again, that just the, how the last season ended, I just feel like we could see that same thing happen. Any concerns with you guys? I think for me, he's the one guy in my top 10 as I'm kind of going through my new ranks that he might not be in the top 10 when I get through kind of my post springs. Not that he'll be that far out, but he might be a guy that does drop out just because of some of those concerns. You guys have any thoughts on what this offense is going to be? Pat Shurmur is the OC. Does he last all season if we don't see that offense doing what Deion wants?
Yeah, I was sitting with Joe. He's old, like college football geek guy from back in the day. Today we had a couple beers and he was down here visiting Austin. And we were talking about Colorado and this offense and some of his projections. And it was a great conversation because basically we landed on this with them. Like, look, Pat Shurmur may be terrible, but he's a yes man. He's going to do whatever Sanders wants him to do. And I think Deion, we were both talking about this. He has one mission, and that is to get Shedeur Sanders to New York and to get a Heisman. And the second person he wants to get there is Travis Hunter. So I could see, I mean, there's so many weapons in this offense that they're going to throw the ball. And even if guys get hurt, they're going to have people waiting in the wings to come in and do it. I just don't see where they don't throw, 40 attempts a game, no matter the game. And, I think in 6-point passing touchdown leagues, which is what these projections these rankings are based off of, I think Shedeur is worth, I think he's worth where we're ranking him. But what do you think, Mike?
Deion has a third goal this season is to get his son healthy through the entire season. And I'm surprised. I did not expect to see you guys have Shedeur in the consensus top 10. I probably have him closer to 20. Non-factor running the football. We talked about the changeover to Pat Shurmur. I mean, just look at it was a slight decrease in volume, like passing wise, those last four games after Pat Shurmur took over. But I mean, you look at it, 217 pass yards, 245 passing yards, 262, and then 86 in the finale. I believe he got hurt against Washington State. But the reason they made that change is because they were throwing the football too much and Shedeur was getting injured with, I believe, a back issue. So like I would expect them to pass it more than they do run. It's not going to be a 50-50 balance. Like they're going to throw it more than they're going to run it, but I would expect it closer to that kind of 50-50 split. And then you combine that with the fact that he's a basically a zero in the running game. Like you are going to have to throw for at least 3,500 passing yards, if not 4,000, and at 30 touchdowns to sniff top 10, quarterback ranking. So I was surprised by this. I will give an ode to Shedeur that he increased his fantasy point per game average from the first season at Jackson State to the second by 8 points. Maybe we see a jump there. In his second season at Colorado, obviously you guys have harped on, we love the wide receiving core. But I don't know. He's closer to 20 than he is in the top 10 for me. Zach, this. I watch a lot of Michigan basketball. This is Juwan Howard vibes all over it of a coach that is in over his head, in my opinion. And I think this is a program trending downwards. I'm not taking Shedeur as a top 10 fantasy quarterback.
Yeah. I mean, I think to look, if this offensive line isn't rebuilt in any sort of way, then it's going to be a repeat of last year, right? He might start off hot, but he's not going to last the whole year. So, you know, I think all those are really good points. I like that we didn't all just go, yes, he's slam dunk top 10. So that's great. Hey, we're going to take a quick break here. And then when we come back, we're going to get through the rest of our top 10, get to Mike's, his secret guy. And then we have a few other things planned for you guys. All right. Our last QB in our top 10 here is Avery Johnson, which may be a bit of a surprise considering this is 6-point passing touchdowns. But Avery Johnson had a crazy athletic profile coming in. He is, you know, maybe the best athlete on the field every time he steps on the field, but he's playing quarterback. He's 6'2", 188. Last year, right, he played in 8 games. He had 479 yards passing. But in that time, he had 300 yards rushing and 7 touchdowns. And a lot of that was spot duty stuff. Like he wasn't playing, he wasn't starting games, anything like that. So he came in, had a 5 touchdown game in the middle of the year. I think that was against Texas Tech, or maybe it was Houston. But he had a 5 touchdown game, and then he came back and he started the bowl game. And this is really where we saw what Avery Johnson can do. I mean, the guy didn't look great passing the ball, but he threw 178 yards and 2 TDs, and then came and ran for 71 yards and another touchdown for 30 fantasy points. Again, this guy didn't look good. He was playing a very good NC State defense, in my opinion, but he still put up 30 fantasy points. And I think that's where the draw is to a guy like Avery Johnson. He's going to be playing in a system with Chris Klieman as his head coach. This guy comes from North Dakota State. He's been at Kansas State for a few years. He likes to run his quarterbacks. His quarterbacks for the last 10 years have averaged, between North Dakota State and Kansas State, have averaged 470 yards on the ground and 9 touchdowns. So, you know, and I think really for Avery, like, you know, he's easily, in my opinion, going to eclipse 470 yards, and whether he gets double digit touchdowns or not is probably what determines whether he's in the top 10 quarterbacks or not. But I mean, this kid is absolutely electric with the ball in his hands. We haven't projected at 2,400 yards passing, 20 touchdowns, and then 550 yards on the ground and 10 touchdowns for 29.4 fantasy points per game. We do have him again at a 45% confidence score. A lot of that has to do with he's young. He hasn't started a lot of games. There is a new offensive coordinator coming in, but it's a Chris Klieman system, so we should know what we got there. But Avery Johnson, I mean, there's a lot to like about him, but there's bust potential. Are you guys worried at all about him busting and not living up to the potential of a top 10, you know, quarterback this year?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. I mean, it's going to come down to what he can do in that passing game. When you look at what Klieman has done with his QBs in the run game, 10 touchdowns isn't a stretch by any means, right? He should get that. I mean, the high side, it's 15 to 17 possibly there. So he's going to get his in the run game. But when you look at what quarterbacks have performed well from a fantasy perspective, it's the guys that were able to throw the ball. If they relied mostly just on the rushing piece, I mean, you look at Adrian Martinez in 2022, right? He had 10 rushing touchdowns, but he only averaged 21 points a game that season just because the passing game was not there. Will Howard in 2020, which again, COVID year, so it's really tough to gauge, but there just wasn't, you know, through 8 touchdowns and 10 interceptions. So it's just, and that quarterback was QB 75. So when you go look through what Klieman has done, his best quarterbacks have been the guys that have been able to throw 20 plus touchdowns. And I think it's really going to come down to Avery Johnson's either going to have to throw 20 touchdowns, and they brought in Matt Wells, so maybe that helps their pass game a little bit. We'll see. Or he's going to have to be on the high end of that rushing touchdown, right? He's going to have to hit that 17, 18 touchdowns just to have that value. So I think there is some risk definitely if you're taking him as a top 10 guy, but like Josh said, you love the potential he has in that run game. And back to dual threat QBs, right? Those are guys that tend to have really good value as long as he can do it in the pass game as well.
Josh, did you have a heavy influence on this top 10 ranking for Avery Johnson, I'm guessing?
I don't think I was like out of the ordinary on him. I think we're all pretty high on him, to be honest.
I wish Eric was here for this episode discussing Avery Johnson, because I remember during the bowl game against NC State where he completed 45% of his passes.
Right.
We did have, I think, I forget if we had his under or over passing prop, probably under, but he's texting me the entire game. Ah, this guy can't throw worth a damn. And I mean, that's kind of that's the concern there, right? With Avery Johnson is can he get there fantasy wise with his passing ability. I like the weapons that they have, Jace Brown, Keegan Johnson. They brought in Dante Cephas from Penn State. Here's my concern. We talk about, you know, Avery Johnson, dual threat, tremendous athlete, right? I was reading up and Matt Wells, the new offensive coordinator, I believe it was him. I don't think it was Kleiman. It was Matt Wells. And he was already talking about how can we preserve Avery Johnson being healthy for the entirety of the season. And here's, you know, just looking at the depth chart, here's the difference for me. And here's the slight concern about how much they're going to utilize him in the passing game or in the running game. Because if you remember back to that NC State game, they were throwing more than I thought they would with Avery Johnson. He had 30 plus passing attempts. Here's the concern. You look back over the years at Kansas State, you got Will Howard and Skylar Thompson. You got Will Howard and Adrian Martinez. Last year, you got Avery Johnson and Will Howard. I don't believe, unless there's another ballyhooed freshman, I don't believe they have a like clear cut QB2 right now. So I wonder how much, you know, as opposed to your past. So I wonder how much they're going to actually want to put him in harm's way in the running game. But again, to your point, Josh and Zach, like, what is it? 4 out of the last 5 years, the quarterbacks run for 100 plus times. So, you know, the trends seem to point that they are going to use him in the running game. But if they're already talking about, you know, how can we preserve his health throughout the entirety of the season? I don't think we're going to get close to maybe, you know, 140, 150 that we would absolutely love from a dual threat quarterback.
Yeah. I mean, if he did hit over 100 rushing attempts, I mean, he's the type of guy that's going to have 600 yards. Right. And so we'll see. I mean, last year as the backup, he had 52, but you know, I mean, I think Avery Johnson definitely, you know, I think in 6-point passing touchdown leagues, you have to be more cautious in drafting him for sure. We also, Froton had him at number 11. I think I had him at number 9 and Zach had him at 10. So we were all right in there in that range. I mean, he, you know, it was close between him and Jackson Arnold. But so we'll see. We'll see what happens to Avery Johnson. But the upside is like ridiculous, right? I mean, he's got, the upside of him is 1,000 rushing yards, 15 to 20 touchdowns if they let him loose. And this is a team I think that's going to compete for the Big 12 championship with Texas and Oklahoma out. So there's going to be they're going to want to make some statements, man. And Avery Johnson's the one that they'll be riding to do that. Him
and hopefully DJ Giddens.
DJ Giddens. Yes. But one of the cool things about that game, right, was that DJ Giddens had that, you know, he gave him a little, you know, basically wide receiver or running back screen out of the backfield and he took it to the house. I mean, his explosiveness does help in this offense too.
That's, I mean, yeah, this is not the running back episode, but that's obviously why we like DJ Giddens this year. Kind of similar to Avery Johnson's, like, who else is behind them? They really don't have a solidified backup at either position. So all the carries to Avery Johnson and DJ Giddens.
Yep. All right. Well, we've been burying the lead the whole episode, but I want to actually talk about KJ Jefferson here. If you want to pull up the graphic, this is Mike Bainbridge's guy. You can talk about him and tell us where you have him ranked and give us all the info you got on him. And then we'll chat about him for a little bit. And then I have one more thing for us to talk about before we get out of here.
So I have been drafting KJ Jefferson in like fifth, sixth round in most of the drafts that I've participated in this off season. And a lot of why I love KJ Jefferson. Well, okay. There's a lot of reasons. One, system, Gus Malzahn, right? Dual threat quarterbacks in a fast paced offense always seem to thrive. And KJ Jefferson fits that build to a T. We have to get the kind of out of the way here. The report did come out that he was arrested on a misdemeanor for reckless driving. That happened back in 2023. I was reading up on it. I don't think this is going to hamper his availability at all at any point during the season. Gus Malzahn was aware of this situation prior to them bringing him in via transfer. So I think he should be in good standing for the season. Won't miss any games or anything like that. So in the spring game, Jefferson completed 12 of 22 passes for 271 yards, actually. So a really explosive downfield passing in that game. I believe there was a 7-yard pass play to Gerard Baker. But I really like the receiving core that he's got to throw to with Kobe Hudson, Xavier Townsend. They have a really talented sophomore tight end, and Randy Pittman. They have a ballyhooed freshman, Bredell Richardson, who is making waves in the spring. So no shortage of weapons there. Three O-line starters back from 2023. So surrounding pieces should be solid for KJ Jefferson. I've tempered my expectations a little bit here. If you kind of look back, because of how run heavy this system is, Gus Malzahn actually doesn't produce a lot of top 10, top 20 quarterbacks. I believe he's had just one guy finish inside the top 20 in the last decade. I believe that was Nick Marshall back in 2013, 2014. So I was a little bit surprised by that, just given once Gus Malzahn has a dual threat, you would think that these guys are consistently finishing inside the top 10, but it really just hasn't happened. When these dual threat quarterbacks under Malzahn get 100 plus carries, though, the floor is ridiculously high, and that's why I like KJ Jefferson this year. The four times that a quarterback under Malzahn has hit 100 plus carries, you get 26 fantasy points per game, 22 fantasy points per game, 25 and 25 again in those four seasons. So I really love the floor here with KJ Jefferson and this fit in this offense. If you look back to, again, this speaks to the floor, the consistency of a Gus Malzahn, a dual threat quarterback. In the games that John Rhys Plumlee was healthy last year, you're looking at 44, 18, 28, 39, 37, 24, and 28. Like, you will take those numbers all day from your like QB1, QB2. So I've tempered my expectations a little bit here on KJ Jefferson. I kind of like him better in the round 6, round 7 range, just because of how, you're not seeing that high upside with a Gus Malzahn quarterback, but I really do, from just a dual threat standpoint, think that he just has, I considered him the safest quarterback in college fantasy this year. Probably not the upside, right, of a Caden Salter and Dylan Gabriel and like, such as that, but like just from a floor standpoint, tell me a scenario where KJ Jefferson busts outside of injury.
Right.
I don't see one, right?
And I mean, to your point, RJ Harvey is what, 205 pounds? Miles Montgomery, 200 pounds. You have DeMarcus Bowman, 200 pounds. KJ Jefferson's 245 pounds. This is your goal line package running back, right? I mean, we saw Isaiah Bowser a couple of years ago, awful running back. Get what, 15 plus touchdowns, a lot of them around the goal line. And that was with John Rhys Plumlee, but they didn't want to run John Rhys around because he's not as big, right? But KJ Jefferson is your goal line running back in my mind. What do you guys think about that?
That's a good call, because one reason why I'm lower on RJ Harvey this year, and I think we talked about it a little on one of the episodes, is KJ Jefferson is probably going to vulture some of those goal line touchdowns. And Harvey, one of the reasons why he was so valuable last year was, I believe, because of what he did touchdown wise. And I do think KJ Jefferson is definitely going to have a lot of value around the goal line. That's one reason why I do like him. Mike brought up some really good points about the QB for Gus Malzahn, because I think you just automatically assume it's just going to be this, you know, this guy that's going to get you 30 points a game, but it's actually been pretty tough to for his quarterbacks to get there. But I like KJ Jefferson. I also, one thing I like too is his schedule, especially to start the year. I think it's really going to get him going in that system. It's not too tough. I mean, he has, I think this is New Hampshire, Sam Houston, TCU, and then Colorado. So his first four games, I mean, it really eases him into this system, the season. And I think he could put up some big numbers and carry that momentum into conference play. So I'm with Mike. He's not quite in my top 10. I need to go look where he is, but I think I like KJ Jefferson this year and what he can do in that offense.
Yeah. The issue is because of how run heavy UCF can be.
Yeah.
He has to hit at least 10 rushing touchdowns to finish top 10 like that. He has to do it. So there's no path for him getting, you know, in this system, there's no path to him getting hitting top 10 quarterbacks if he doesn't get 10 rushing touchdowns, in my opinion. So he's again just outside the top 10 for me. But again, I think the floor and just kind of, you know, there's limited bust factor with KJ Jefferson this year, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think to your touchdown point, looking at like the last 8 years with Gus, they averaged almost 30 touchdowns rushing a game, and they're only throwing 20, which obviously affects KJ Jefferson. But looking at that almost 30 rushing touchdowns, you know, back to your point, I think he's going to be a guy that they really use. So that opportunity is going to be there for him to get there.
Yeah, that's good. Hey, I want to take a quick break here in a minute. When we come back, what I want to look at is who's going top 10 QBs in ADP versus what our top 10 rankings look like. And then let's have a little bit of a conversation about that to wrap things up here. So we're going to take a break. We'll be right back. All right. Hey, Thomas, would you mind throwing up our top 10 QB graphic again for me? And so we can throw that up so everybody can see that while we talk through this. So top 10 ADP players right now, you have pretty much the same as our top 10 QBs. We got Caden Salter, Byron Brown, Dylan Gabriel, Jordan McCloud. Those are pretty chalky, right? Those are going to be your top four almost in any draft right now. I mean, maybe that changes over time. And then from there, we have Jackson Dart next, but top five ADP is actually Shedeur Sanders. And then number six is Nico. Number seven for ADP is Jalen Milroe. Number eight is Haynes King. Number nine is Kyren Drones. And number 10 is Garrett Green. So the two guys that were higher on than ADP are Jackson Dart and then Avery Johnson, right? Avery Johnson's, he's going right in that. I mean, I guess it depends on what draft you're in, but
seventh, eighth round.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of these like Carps best balls, he's going like sixth round, fifth round. I can't get him in the seventh anymore, but that's higher than any of us are paying for him at this point. So, but Jackson Dart is the one here that for us, we're really high on Jackson Dart. I don't know where you have a mic, and he's creeping up ADP over time, but he's not even in the top 10 ADP right now. Who's right? Are the drafters right or are we right?
Of course we're right. Of course we're right. I'm with you guys. I missed last week, but, you know, Josh, we've been talking kind of offline, and just the way that Ole Miss is shaping up this year. And, you know, I was kind of readjusting my projections for them this year. That adding Henry Parrish now to that backfield, it is full-blown committee. There is not a bell cow there. And I think that bodes well for the passing game, where they have every weapon under the sun, right? With the Antoine Wells, Trey Harris, the tight ends. They got two tight ends, really talented, Caden Prescorn, and then the transfer from Virginia Tech, Daquan Wright. Just weapons everywhere. So you have a dual quarterback in Jackson Dart. So of course we're right with that one. Jackson Dart is a top 10 quarterback, maybe top five.
Yeah. What do you think, Zach?
Yeah, no, I don't think I've gotten Jackson Dart in a draft yet, which is crazy because of where I have him ranked. But if you've looked at my drafts, I've been going QB early, which I'm not looking for a QB when I would probably take him. but he's a guy that I definitely like. If I kind of wait on QB and if I don't take a QB in those first few rounds, I really like where you can get Dart. I mean, his value is just so good to me. He was, I think when we pulled the latest ADP, he was one of the guys that was trending up, and we are seeing, but I'm surprised at where he is still and where he's going in some of these drafts. So yeah, he's such a good value right now.
Yeah. And Mike, I thought you said it so beautifully. It's like, hey, look, they just got, you know, Krosky Merritt out of the portal. They got Parrish. Like, this is RBBC. It screams that, right? All these guys can, or at least most of them can catch balls out of the backfield. I mean, everything's setting up for Jackson Dart to just absolutely smash this year. If Anton Wells can stay healthy, and that wide receiver core is going to be unbelievable. He's a guy for me, even. Like, I've drafted him a decent amount, but it's like, yeah, I need to be drafting him more. I mean, I'm starting to get to the place where, man, I'm just going to take Jackson, Dart, and Nico in the fifth, sixth round every time and just let it ride, because those guys are just such great value there. My question for you guys with Jackson Dart, I mean, how close is it with Jordan McLeod for you guys at this point?
For me, it'd be how close is it to Dylan Gabriel? I have Jordan. I'm one of those that has Jordan McLeod over Dylan Gabriel.
Okay.
Just because I like the upside far more with Texas State than I do with Oregon moving to the Big Ten in a far tougher schedule, in my opinion. To me, Dart is, I don't know where my projection has him, but like the 4-5 spot, I believe for me is Gabriel and Dart. And, you know, I prefer Dart personally because I like the situationally better, you know, and then the schedule, obviously. I haven't drafted Dylan Gabriel in that first and second rounds personally. I know Zach got him in a recent draft in the third round where that's obviously more comfortable, but I don't know. I can't, and I told Josh this, like, Dylan Gabriel from Hawaii, like, good luck going to Ann Arbor in November against a top two defense in the country. And then I think either, you know, what is it, a week earlier or a week later, they got to go to Madison. Like, I don't see the upside there or I don't see him, you know, producing those 30 to 40 fantasy point games in the elements that maybe a McLeod can in Sunbelt Conference.
Yep.
Yeah.
Zach.
For me, because right now I have Gabriel 3, McLeod 4, Dart 5. I wouldn't say it's super close. And part of the reason for that for me is just McLeod and just some of those defenses that he's going to play this year. I just feel like there's a ton of upside. We saw what he did against Sunbelt last year. I think the system's going to be really good. He's got some good receivers. I think it's probably, as we get closer to the season, it's getting closer. I would say when McLeod first transferred there, it probably wasn't as close as where I am now. But I initially had the top three QBs kind of in tier one, and I've moved McLeod in there and Dart's right there with them, I think. And then there's a pretty big gap, I think, between that next tier. But I think Dart belongs in tier one, and not that tier two.
So I guess basically what we're all saying is, like, the value you get for him, right? The fifth, sixth, seventh round, which I've seen Dart fall sixth, seventh quite a bit. Like, he's going after Nico and, you know, a lot of these drafts. So it's like, yeah, I'm going to take that value. That's really good value on Jackson Dart. And so he shouldn't be there. Okay. So, another quarterback I want to talk about here is Jalen Milroe is at 7. He's not in our consensus rankings. I don't even know. We didn't even have him in our top 14 consensus wise. I have him at 17. Zach, you had him. I'm not even sure where you have him. Oh, no, at 14. So, you know, he was right there on the edge for us, right? Basically number 15. Jalen Milroe. Should he be higher for us?
Well, I was going to ask you kind of the same question because he just went third or fourth round in one of our best balls that we're doing right now. am I missing something? Because I'm where you guys are at. I have him at 14. So are people just so excited about the spring game where he completed 3 of 9 passes that he's just going to be a top 10 quarterback? That's where I'm at. I struggled with his projection. I think, Zach, you're the same. I don't know. I don't see that one.
Yeah, let me ask you guys this question. Elijah Badger comes in there. Does that change things for you? Or is Milroe just not a good enough passer to warrant a top 10?
Oh boy, you stumped us on that.
I don't. Like that doesn't change much for me. If Badger gets in there, because I think we know what we get with Milroe at this point. I feel like where I have him at 14, I don't think that's probably going to change much. If he continues to go in the third round in these drafts, that's way too high for me. I won't have any of him. The offense, we've seen QB success there, but it's really those guys that can throw the ball well, in that offense. So again, they can use him in the run game. It'll be interesting to see how they kind of tailor that offense to him this coming year. Yeah. and how they use him. Cause if they don't want to use him in the run game, a whole lot, like we've seen in the past, then I think that value drops even more, with him there. So he's kind of one of those, again, have him in the mid teens. And that's that to me feels like ceiling, with where I'm viewing him right now.
Cause he was not going in the fourth round early in our drafts, right? That's just kind of flipped recently, right? Yeah. So I'm wondering, I don't understand where was it just the spring game performance? Was it, I mean, he had positive reports all throughout camp, I believe, but I don't see what's changed drastically that he's jumping 2-3 rounds into a top 5-6 quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I can think is Elijah Badger. I mean, Jeremy Bernard looked good. But, like, look, Kendrick Law and Kobe Prentice they weren't blowing me away. I mean, the other wide receivers, like, against SEC defenses and secondaries, like, they're not going to get crazy separation. And if they can't get separation, I mean, obviously, Kalen DeBoer can scheme whatever. But, like, if it's just Jeremy Bernard, I mean, I'm concerned because – And look, like, I think DeBoer's, he's a legitimate offensive genius. He will adjust his system to his players, in my opinion. And look, Jam Miller and Justice Haynes, if Justin Haynes can stay healthy, are the two best players, in my opinion, on that offense. And so maybe they go run heavy here, and that does not bode well for Jalen Milroe. I don't know.
Here's what you do with Milroe this year, right? You draft him. And he has Western Kentucky and South Florida the first 2 weeks. He's going to be right up there, right? And then you trade him. You trade him away when he runs into Wisconsin. He's got Georgia, South Carolina, Tennessee. Like, it's gets a little bit tougher, but you can ride that 2-game start to the season where he's probably going to put up some points and then get something good back for him.
So what you just told me, Zach, is that people are going to, like, timestamp this podcast after the first week. And when he lights it up against Western Kentucky, they're like, I told you so.
Man, Zach's right, though. Like, right after that 2-game stretch, it's at Wisconsin, bye week, and then Georgia. Are you starting him in either of those two games? And then, obviously, the bye sandwich in between that. So, get it while it's good at the start of the season with Milroe.
Yeah, redraft strategy right there. That's great. All right, well. That's going to wrap up our show. That was a fun conversation at the end. Fun getting to talk with you guys about our top 10 QBs and finish that list today. And then get a little bonus with KJ Jefferson. That was a lot of fun.
And maybe we'll have all four of us next week.
For the first time, crazy.
The first episode.
Yes. Yes. And we get to talk about Haynes King. Eric Broton back. He is our boy is at the draft doing draft content all this week. So we wish him well. But we'll be excited to have Froton, our missing companion, back and have the Fearsome Four back doing it up. So, hey, with that, we've come to the end of our show. Thank you guys for listening. We love your continued support by liking, commenting, subscribing on all of our stuff. We want to interact with you guys both here in the show and outside of that as well. We will see you guys back here next Monday at 9 p.m. Eastern time. Until then, do small things with great love.